Fatia Hijazi sat in the back seat of the Toyota as her driver Ahmed steered through the darkened streets. The night before, she had called him to ask if he would pick her up before dawn. She didn't say why, and Ahmed, as usual, didn't ask. But her father did. She had awoken to a quiet house and managed to tiptoe out without waking Abu, but just as soon as the car had reached the corner of the street, her cell phone rang, and she'd spent 5 minutes explaining to her father that she had to be at work early, that she would be paid overtime, and that her boss wouldn't make a habit of placing such inhuman demands on her time. Lie piled upon lie, and even then Abu would worry. She didn't want him to know just how much she was working on the case. She'd stashed the biological samples from Nouf's body in her handbag and wanted to process them, which she could do only when no one else was in the lab. Lights filled the shop windows, but as the Toyota crept past, they flickered off here and there in preparation for morning prayers. The only other movement came from black shapes flitting through the streets. Normally, men inhabited these pavements, but this early in the morning there were women, as quiet and alert as deer, stealing the opportunity to wander unmolested. A man would be a blot on the picture, his robe glowing whiter than the moon, chasing away the dark shapes of night. Katya felt uneasy. She hadn't stopped thinking of Nouf all night. The day before, she'd been certain that Nouf had been murdered. But what if the scratches on her arms and the wound on her head had happened during the drowning, or been caused by an accident? The family wanted to handle the investigation quietly. She respected their need for privacy. But what if they were hiding something? They might never have told her about the cover-up had she not called Othman to warn him that the examiner had done a shoddy job. She hated having these thoughts. Inevitably, they led her to wonder if she was doing the right thing, marrying a man she'd chosen herself, a man her father didn't like. 10 minutes later, Ahmed pulled up to a small metal door that looked like an old service entrance but was actually the women's entrance to the lab. She thanked him, checked that her burqa was securely fastened, and quickly got out of the car. Glancing around just long enough to see that the parking lot was empty, she descended the stairs to the doorway and swiped her ID tag. A green light flashed and the door swung open. She let out a sigh of relief. Inside, she switched on the lights and went to her workstation, a small white desk in the corner which she kept meticulously clean. Her hands were shaking as she opened the desk drawer and put the samples inside, tucking them beneath a neat stack of tissues. She had taken the precaution of labelling them all with false ID numbers and names from the other cases she was working on. She shut the drawer and locked it. It took a few minutes to prepare the skin sample from Nouf's fingernails, but just as she was about to slide it into the microscope, there was a noise behind her.
Sabah al-khair?
It was a simple good morning, but the shock of it nearly made her cry out. Turning, she saw her co-worker, Salwa.
Who is it?
Salwa demanded. Katya realized that she hadn't removed her burqa. She lifted it now, showing Salwa her face. Salwa frowned. Self-appointed chief of the women's section of the lab, she was a short, quick, sturdy woman who strode about with a pencil behind her ear and her burqa flipped up.
What are you doing here so early?
Salwa asked, drawing closer to Katya. She looked straight into Katya's eyes.
The only reason women come here early is to escape their husbands or fathers.
Katya felt her cheeks flush. Despite the gloss of concern, Salwa had managed to make her feel like an abused woman anyway. Nobody hits me, she said.
So what are you doing here?
I couldn't sleep. Salwa eyed her.
Ah, is this about your upcoming wedding?
Katya had to say something. I am nervous, she admitted. Honestly, I can't sleep. I think work is the best remedy for me right now. Salwa stuck her pencil back behind her ear. Finding this excuse plausible enough, if not wholly satisfying, she drew herself up and said,
Fine. I've got plenty for you to do. But you're not being paid overtime. I hope you understand that. What are you working on now?
Skin cells from the Rodrigo case.
Salwa glanced down at the microscope. I've got two other cases that have a rush priority. She dumped two massive folders on the table. Process these as soon as possible.
Before Katya could reply, she turned and left, muttering something about needing to dust the division chief's office before he arrived. Katya suspected she wanted to use his Italian coffee maker and perch herself on his massage chair, where she could watch the news and maybe catch an Oprah rerun before the working day began. She opened the folders and inspected their contents. She felt crushed. It would take her days to cover it all. She had assured Uthman she would do everything possible. He was waiting for answers. She glanced at the door. Turning back to the counter, she pushed the folders aside, took Nouf's sample from the table, and slid it under the microscope.
Nair chewed a miswak and stared through binoculars across the vast expanse of desert. To the south reached a great sheet of sand. Some distance to the north, the foothills of the Hejaz Mountains flickered yellow against the brilliant morning light. He lowered the binoculars. Just 3 feet away stood Suleiman Suhail, private investigator and owner of the Benson and Hedges Detective Agency. In the hour they'd spent driving out here, Nair had expected him to light a cigarette, but apparently he wasn't a smoker. "Where are we?" Suhail asked. "This is the spot the Bedouin marked," Nair said, checking the coordinates against his own GPS. He glanced to the west and saw Mutlak's truck approaching, churning up a thick cloud of dust in its wake. Mutlak was the best of the Bedouin trackers who'd assisted in the search for Nouf. His coming today was a favour, and although Nair trusted him completely, he was anxious about the meeting between him and the investigator. "By the way, these are her things," Suhail said, taking a black plastic bag from the back of the jeep and bringing it to Nair. "The Bedouin found them with the body. Maybe there's a clue in there." Surprised that the Sahrawis had given Nouf's belongings to the investigator, Nair took the sack. It held a dirty white robe, a man's robe. One side was blackened, probably from exposure to the sun, and the whole thing smelled like the medical examiner's office. In the bag he also found a narrow gold wristwatch and a single bright pink shoe with a 6-inch stiletto heel. "Not exactly a walking shoe," Suhail grinned. "There's only one thing you do with that kind of shoe." Annoyed and vaguely offended, Nair decided not to encourage him. He took the bag to the jeep and tucked it into his duffel bag. Mutlak's truck arrived with a crackle of tires on dirt and a billow of dust. He greeted Nair with the traditional kiss on the nose, the only Bedouin gesture Nair had never dared imitate. Mutlak was imposing, tall and broad-shouldered. "Thank you for coming," Nair said.
"It's no problem, brother.
According to the map, they found her here." He pointed to the wadi behind them. Suhail approached, and Nair introduced the two men. But Mutlak was already peering over the investigator's shoulder at the footprints he had left in the sand. Nair felt the urge to brag. He wanted to tell Suhail that Mutlak never forgot a footprint. He explained instead that Mutlak was from the Mura tribe, a group renowned for its tracking skills. Suhail seemed to know what it meant to be a Mura, and gazed at Mutlak with new interest. "Has he found the girl's footprints?" he asked.
"Not yet," said Mutlak over his shoulder, "but I will know when I see them. There are many girls in the desert, but I bet you only one of them was running scared in a pair of city shoes."
Nea followed Mutlak's truck, wondering how his friend could see anything amidst all of the dust blowing about. They drove until Nair spotted acacia trees in the distance. They were set back from the wadi, a semicircle of trees enclosing a large boulder. The sight sparked a sudden familiarity. He had come here recently with Othman. Naya drove up to the trees and motioned for Mutlak to stop. Everyone climbed out.
"What is it?" Suhail asked.
Naya noticed that his face was dangerously red. He probably never left the quiet of an air-conditioned office. Mutlak came up behind him and studied the ground. "These look like your prints."
"They are," Naya said, studying the tangle of prints in the sand. Despite knowing Mutlak so well, he was still impressed.
"Who was with you?" Mutlak asked.
"Othman Ashrawi, the brother of the victim."
"Ah, yes."
Mutlak took a closer look, walking around the boulder and following the tracks, one hand held forward like a divining rod. "He is a nervous man."
"Othman?"
"Yes, but he follows you." Naya couldn't make anything out of the prints. He was hot and tired. He sat on the boulder, grateful for the thin slice of shade. He saw Suhail coming. He was carrying a shoe.
"I spotted this beneath one of those flowers," he said as he approached.
It was a rugged shoe with a well-worn sole. Naya inspected it. It was a size 36, the same as the stiletto.
"May I see?" Mutlak asked. Naya offered him the shoe and he studied it carefully but without comment. He handed it back to Naya.
The three men got back into their vehicles and drove on. They had gone only a few kilometers when Mutlak stopped and leaned out of his window, calling over to Naya,
"The rain fell here, so we won't find more footprints beyond this."
Disappointed, Naya got out of the jeep, leaving Suhail asleep in the passenger seat. Mutlak was right. The sand had been smoothed down by the rain. Mutlak got out and joined him. They went to the edge of the wadi and peered down. It wasn't very far. A 10-foot drop to the bottom. Someone could have tossed her down there after hitting her on the head, in which case she would have woken up and started walking down the wadi, not realizing that it was going to rain. Or perhaps she never woke up. The sun was setting as Naya said goodbye to Mutlak, started the jeep, and drove back down to the road. The day had brought back all the frustration he'd felt searching for Noof, and it taunted him. It wasn't until he was back on the freeway that he realized Suhail was unconscious. Heatstroke. Well, there was nothing he could do except take him to the hospital when they got back to Jeddah. Some investigator, this one, little Benson and Hedges. It was going to take a bigger man to find Noof's killer. This shrimp couldn't find water in a cooler.